and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. Today, we continue our month-long series of presentations from the Arctic Imperative Summit hosted by the Alaska Dispatch. This week, The Eskimo and the Oil Man, a conversation with author Bob Reese and the Honorable Edward Itta, former mayor of the North Slope Borough. Publisher of the Alaska Dispatch, Alice Rogoff, served as host of the four-day summit, recorded at Alyeska Resort in Girdwood, August 25th through the 27th.
Okay, so now on to the next part of the program. We're going to hope that the clanging of the dishes is quiet enough that we can talk through it. This is going to be a conversation between two gentlemen, namely former Mayor Edward Itta from the North Slope and Bob Reese, who wrote a book that you all need to read if you haven't, called The Eskimo and the Oil Man. The Eskimo in the title is Edward. And the book is for sale in bookstores all around here, certainly at Tidal Wave. Bob has been a world-class writer for lots of publications you know about, and I don't know how much you know about Edward Itta's background, but before he was mayor of the North Slope Borough, he'd been a president of ICC Alaska and a former president of the Whaling Captains Association and the Subsistence Advisory Council for Northern Alaska, and in short, one of the great leaders of this state. So I'm not going to tell you any more than that.
Good afternoon. Palagipsi, Ariga, Mani Lagapta. My name is Edward Saganita, and I worked actually with Bob to help him get the story out, and I agreed to it because I felt that only one side of the story was getting out there, and of that, some of it was also distorted or not true. So Bob and I talked, and we agreed that we'd be upfront, straight up, and I would give my version of the impacts that I felt were occurring to all of us and how we dealt with it. And during this time, Bob has not only gained my respect as a writer, but also has become a friend. And I debated that in my own mind and saying, do you really want to be friends with a journalist? But it all worked out, so we're going to play it kind of loose, and we know we have to. We probably got about a half an hour, and because we're behind schedule here. But I wanted Bob to lead off our discussion. And by the way, thank you, Alice. Thank you, everybody that has come here. And just as a last point of clarification, my friend Pete Schlabe was asked to be a part of this, and for whatever reason, he chose not to participate in this one. But that's okay. I can take all the shots I want, I think. And no, I'm just kidding. I think this whole issue for me has been about collaboration and cooperation. So with that, I give it to Bob, and you can open it up here, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Alice, also thank you for inviting me for this terrific event, and thank you also to all the people in the audience. There are so many people in this audience who were willing to talk to me while I wrote this book. Mead Treadwell, George Nunwook, Vera Metcalf, Fran Ulmer, so many people, thank you, more than I could name. Over 100 years ago, Rudyard Kipling, the British writer, coined the phrase, the great game. The great game is the story of the way that powers on Earth, the great powers, duke it out in remote areas for dominance of the planet. It was interesting to me that last night's speech, the State Department speech, began with someone talking about Syria and the Mideast, and everyone sat up you know, everyone sat up straighter. The Mideast, it's important what's going on there. We all know that. It's a no-brainer. Well, I thought about a movie I rented the night before I came up here, Lawrence of Arabia. Anyone who's ever seen Lawrence of Arabia remembers how it starts. Lawrence is going to be sent out into the desert to talk to who? Those Arab people that nobody cares about, that don't mean anything? And the British general says to Lawrence, oh, this place, meaning Saudi Arabia, meaning Syria, meaning all the places we know are important. This is a sideshow of a sideshow, he says. And we laugh at that guy because we know that he didn't understand how the world works. The great game. Well, the great game's not just about military stuff. It's about whether you protect your environment. The great game is about whether the Coast Guard gets their ships. The great game is about whether there's a harbor. The great game is about building roads. The great game is about all the things that people have talked about for the last 3 days here. And the great game is the State Department promising, as you asked, to get to work on the Law of the Sea Treaty so that we're playing the great game instead of watching the great game. I was thinking last night, in 100 years, do we really want to watch, do we really want a Russian audience or a Chinese film-going audience to watch a Chinese or a Russian actor playing an American politician talking about the Arctic 100 years earlier and saying on screen, oh, the Arctic, that's a sideshow of a sideshow. This is our great game. So this is a work in progress. Thank you, Fran Ulmer and Alice. You know, we've been trying to figure out, I call this the ice crescent, America's ice crescent. And let's just sum up what we've talked about for the last 3 days here, all the things that are going on in this one place. We got that. The border with Canada. Well, who will get the resources there? The Law of the Sea Treaty. Who will control under the sea? The area close to Russia, where they've started buzzing us with bear bombers again, and the State Department says it doesn't mean anything, but the Coast Guard says that it does. The oil leases all through this area. The greatest migrations of sea mammals on Earth occurring here. The bowhead whale, right. The walrus, all the animals that the Inupiat people depend on. All this important stuff in the great game. But who haven't we talked about yet? We haven't talked about the most important component, the Inupiat people and the people who live there, the people in the middle. The reason why I wanted to write the book was I wanted to write to deal with this big canvas of the great game through a personal story. And when Edward was kind enough to say that he would give me access for a year, and Pete Slavey was at Shell, well, I was grateful. I have to speed it up because we don't have a lot of time here, Alice, right? Mm-hmm. So today we'll talk about what happened a little bit in the past, but the reason we're doing it is to understand the future and hopefully have recommendations for military people who are here, corporate people who are here, all the people who are here who want to develop the Arctic or move into it or protect it. So Edward kindly agreed to have me ask him some questions to relive what happened with Shell Oil over the last few years. He was the man in the middle then. Charlotte Brower is the woman in the middle now. And hopefully there'll be lessons here. So if we're talking about mistakes, we're not blaming anybody. We're trying to find a clearer way to a better common future for us all. So, shall we hit it?
Okay.
Shell came in, and in the beginning, we both know, they made some mistakes. And I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind, let's do a case study here, explaining to us when a big oil company came in, what they could have done better, what their mistakes were, how you dealt with that over time.
Okay. Hindsight being what it is, but first I have to back up a little bit. And I think the best term to use on this was somebody else said, okay, there's talk of an oil discovery of huge proportions in this frontier called the Arctic outside of Alaska. And in a frontier, nobody really knows. There's no playbook. There's nothing written down. You do this or that. I think it became obvious to me. I got into office in November of 2005. In 2006, about February or March, Shell officials came and said, we've got this project that we're planning to do out in your ocean in the Chukchi Sea. And what I'm about to say was not necessarily Shell's fault, because at the time, what is now the Bureau of Oceans and Energy Management was the Minerals Management Service. The Minerals Management Service did a very, very poor job of informing our people of what was happening out there and the possible ramifications of the scale of the projects that they were talking about. So, to be fair to Shell, I always say, and still believe to this day, that they were authorized to do what they wanted to do by the permitting agency, which at that time was the Minerals Management Service. And as my fellow whalers know, on draft EISs, on prior projects and proposals, for 40 years we talked to MMS about our concerns for our whale, the migration paths, the possible noise effects, the clean air, clean water. But they were never put into any draft EIS for consideration. So that was the first lesson I think that both Shell and I learned. And the other one, which would take too much time here, was learning about who the Inupiaqs were and how we govern ourselves and what is important to us. Nobody from Shell ever came up for a multi-billion dollar project and did a little bit of field work, if you will, on what's out there, who are these people, what are their concerns, and it was like they came in just cold turkey and boom, they were there. They told me, 1 year from now, we're going to have this huge fleet out there with oil tankers that can hold 9 million gallons of fuel and icebreakers and what. I say, whoa, wait a minute. What are you talking about? That's how bad the communication or lack thereof was that Shell, as a company in the forefront, had to deal with as they came in. So I qualify my comments. People seem to think that it was all Shell's doing when it wasn't. Remember, MMS, the report that came out that's in the book by the Office of the Accounting folks.
GAO.
Yeah. Put out a report that said MMS blew it big time. They didn't listen to their scientists that said there's all these concerns you need to be dealing with. So a whole number of very important issues that we had been talking about as whaling captains. I see Anai over there. I see our president of our Barrow Association, Eugene Brower, the husband of our current mayor. That the connection between oil industry and the agency that permitted them was too close. There was no division. So that's what we had to start with. So that's a long, convoluted way to say it, but I hope you get the picture of what it was we were dealing with. And by the way, Mr. President, great to see you again.
Maybe you could go on a little bit about cultural differences between a corporation and the Inupiaq people, and not do the agency, but just a corporation. And also, some of these were resolved, so this is a lesson for other people who might want to deal with the people of the North Slope.
Okay. It's complicated even for me, and I live there. And I but we have, first and foremost, I would like to say before we all forget, my wife, my dear wife, Elsie May, without whom I wouldn't be standing up here. I know that for a fact, and I thank God, and I thank Elsie for allowing this to happen. But, and I just lost my train of thought. Isn't that wonderful? I'm allowed that at 67 now.
Well, this is what wives are for, right? To lose your train of thought.
Okay. The question was?
Excuse me. The question was the culture of a corporation and the culture of people and how that initially was a problem, but how, at least to some degree, it was overcome.
Okay. That's another subject that we can talk about for quite a length of time. And my friend Anari, over there would be more appropriate. But when I got in, as a regional government, the North Slope Borough was a key focus of all the industry and the agencies. But we have not only our local municipal government, we have our regional village corporation, which the land claims modeled as the form that we should take to move ourselves forward. Not only that, but we have our village federally recognized tribal governments. We have our village corporations that we deal with. Plus, we also have had the city governments, most of them second-class cities, but nonetheless local form of government. And as mayor, I tried to get these various interest issues addressed because the borough seemed to be the only entity that had the capacity to respond to all these documents, all these requests, all these proposals, complicated, technical, and always made a point of talking with the regional corporations, with the, I forgot the IRA, the Indian Reorganization Act. We have ICAS, the Inupiat Community of the Arctic Slope, which is a federal regional government also. So with all of these out there, and I never forget, and it stated in the book, Shell came up and said, okay, we've got this modified version now. This was right after Deepwater Horizon. And they looked at me and said, okay, you can go tell your people that it's going to be okay. We're not talking thousands of feet. We're talking hundreds of feet. We're not talking the pressure that Deepwater Horizon is dealing with. It's very low pressure. That was a pivotal point when I looked at the president of Shell, Marvin Odom. And I got a little, because I was expected to be the messenger for them to convince my people that things were okay. I turned around and said, no, you go do it. So finally, they have done a great job now, by the way, of going targeting all the coastal villages and letting people know what is happening, what the details are, what are you doing about blowout preventers. And this Deepwater Horizon incident was a real eye-opener because it brought back memories just not long ago, which makes me realize how short our memory span is. Remember Exxon Valdez, folks? Huh? Just a few years ago. And how does that relate to up here? Boy, did it ever come back to me big time when they had all the infrastructure in the world the U.S. has to offer when Deepwater Horizon happened and they couldn't control it. So I'm getting ahead of myself, probably, Bob.
No, go ahead.
The overriding concern had always been to protect our way of life, and that meant keeping the water clean, having clean air, protecting our marine mammals on the ocean, which is who we are. People tend to define the ocean as a separate thing and the land as a separate thing. Well, guess what? Inupiaq Eskimos are both cannot live without the land or the sea. We are the Arctic. And that is our charge, to take care of what got us here for thousands of years. And don't get me wrong, people have always said or felt that I was anti-development. Granted, initially, I was. I ran in 2005 on a platform against offshore, period. It was not only no, but hell no. Over my dead body, if need be. That's how strong I felt about it. But guess what? You always think when you run for office, you know what it's going to be all about. I learned very quickly that one of the major responsibilities of a mayor is to keep the revenue stream going of the tax base that's up there. And guess what, folks? 90-some percent of our revenue comes from oil and gas. We don't tiptoe around that. We have worked with oil and gas for 40 years. But we are looking to coexist with industry and ask for standards that apply to the Arctic, not temperate zones in the Gulf of Mexico and whatnot. Because as I said, this was all a frontier. We need the oil in the Trans-Alaska pipeline. So I better stop right there, Bob.
Oh, you're very eloquent.
Time's flying, and I tend to get going too much sometimes.
I got caught up in the rhetoric. I forgot my question. So what would you say to it? My background is as an environmentalist. I came to this book as a guy who'd written a book about global warming and still believed that hydrocarbon emissions cause it. And I was surprised by what I learned, as you were.
Maybe at this point, let me ask you. A lot of you don't know this. You just heard him. He was more environmental-oriented. And then I read an opinion comment piece. I believe it was in the New York Times, was it?
It was in Forbes, I think.
Yeah, Forbes. Forbes magazine. He actually said, give Shell a chance.
Limited exploratory.
Limited, yes.
Exploratory.
Yeah, he qualified
it. Exploratory.
But that was the end result of what I tried to do, regardless of our differences, whether it be the state agencies, the federal agencies, industry themselves, totally philosophically different what we need. But there was never any reason to start disrespecting each other. Always respect each other's point of view and express what we need to say. Just because we have a different point of view doesn't mean we can't work together. And I believe that with all my heart, and did my very best to represent my people, who I thank, all the Inupiaqs, that had enough faith and confidence to elect me as mayor for 2 terms. And I'll be speaking to that a little bit later this afternoon. But that was interesting to me.
You convinced me. So.
Well, living example of Shell did really try, and they are trying. But it's all a frontier. It's all new. So,
this is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Bob Reese, author of The Eskimo and the Oil Man, and the Honorable Edward Itta, former mayor of the North Slope Borough. Their onstage conversation was recorded at the Arctic Imperative Summit on August 27th.
Let's switch just for a second. Okay. I don't see the hand yet here. We have Department of Defense people here who are interested in the Arctic. I attended a war game at the Navy War College about a year ago, and they were dealing with Arctic scenarios, possible terrorism in the Arctic, oil spills in the Arctic, a ship with nukes out of North Korea in the Arctic. This is the Navy War College. They pride themselves on anticipating real things that could happen. They're not science fiction writers, and they're not environmentalists. There wasn't a single Inupiaq person at this war game. There wasn't a single Native American at the war game. There were hundreds of alleged experts at the war games. There were technological people. There were Coast Guard, Navy, Marines, scientists, communications people. Sometimes I think that in the lower 48, people think when they talk about, let's include the Inupiat people, let's consult the Inupiat people, that they think they're doing you a favor. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the other way around, that you're doing them a favor. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about shipping for the last 2 days, 3 days. Felix, all the ships that will be coming through soon, or all the ships expected to come soon, the military ships that might be up there soon. What do you want to tell the military people who are from the Pentagon here today about the way that there should be a partnership between local people and them?
Yes. I believe Admiral Osterboe's predecessor, and also what's the commandant's name now? Pops?
Pap.
Predecessor, my friend. Refresh my memory.
Thad Allen.
Admiral Allen and I happened to hit it off pretty well. And so well, in fact, that he called me at the office and say, what about this, what about that? The first time that any... And he's the commandant of the Coast Guard, and he's got Homeland Security. And what caught him was the story of these little green men, that people, I should say, that came into town from a cruise ship parked right in front of Barrow.
That they didn't know was coming.
Nobody knew about. They didn't go through customs. They were in our community. They had cleared through, they were from Germany, by the way.
Germany.
Yeah. And they had cleared through the Northwest Passage and ended up in Barrow. And when we told that story to the Coast Guard, and I had forgotten they actually are a branch of Homeland Security now, their faces just went white. They said, what are you talking about? And this was after the fact. So I think what Commandant Allen and the predecessor of Admiral Osterboe have done is reaching out now and learning what it about the community, what the needs are, and going at it from the very grassroots level. And I see Mayor Hacharok for the City of Barrow is here, and I know he's working real hard with them, and also our mayor, current mayor's carrying on the activities that the Coast Guard is doing. I would say the advice is to come on up and just start talking on the ground level and let people know you are our friend and that you are sincere about what it is that you want to do, because we have lived there for thousands of years. We feel we can contribute. We're no different than any other group. We like to be included. We like to be acknowledged. We think we're of some value, and at the very least, if nothing else, to be respectful and let us know what it is that you're planning well ahead of time. And that'd be my advice, but I want to say this. 3 weeks ago, Coast Guard, three helicopters on the tarmac up there, a C-130. Up there was a Coast Guard ship and all these other support little craft. It's great to finally be acknowledged and recognized that they need a presence up there, because there is no infrastructure. All this, we're focused on oil and gas now. But once I get through my, sometimes I go through my rant, and I like to end with this. And we're not ending yet, Bob, but you say oil and gas is one huge thing all by itself. And then there's the issue of climate change, results of climate change. Fisheries, we got fish we never saw before going up there. We got yummy king salmon coming up there now, too. So tourism, marine transportation, as Bob said, our life is changing. My generation's life is changing. My fellow whalers can attest to the fact that the change is there, it's very real, and we need all the science that we can get to make good decisions. And the last thing about science is that we have no standard right now, no database, where we can measure changes 5 or 10 years down the road from here. That's how big of a frontier this whole new event is that's happening to us. And again, I'm just going to wait till this afternoon to commend Alice for taking this on, and all of you, my friend Mead, that so many. Let's just take a minute here and just look at your neighbor, okay? Shake his hand or her, because we all have one thing in common here, okay? All of us. Yeah. All right.
Hey, Ed.
See? Okay? You and me. Yeah, hey, Bob. So, but we're all here because we have an interest one way or the other about what happens in the Arctic. And I thank all of you on behalf of our people, our region, the state of Alaska, for coming up here and taking the time and effort to learn all you can of not only investment opportunities, but of the people themselves, as the last panel just discussed with you.
We probably only have a couple. We have 10 more minutes?
Okay.
10 more minutes. So a comment and then a question.
Okay.
At that Navy war game that I was at, the one where there were no Native people, and what happens is you have these sessions where all the experts get together in different classrooms at a college, and they examine a particular question. And that particular question was how you would clean up an oil spill. And they're given a bunch of givens that they have to use. But that particular given was that this particular oil spill would last for, 8 weeks or something. And the oil spill would end in the end of July or beginning of August. So you're already smiling, you know where we're going here. So if 8 weeks, after beginning of August, we're sort of into October. Mm-hmm. In October, we got the ice coming out.
Right.
There was not a single Native person to say that in there. And I sat there for about 40 minutes listening to, how do we get the ships around, and how do we get the food in, and how do we get the crews ashore, and how do we get the supplies there? And, they spent a lot of money getting all these people there. It would have been a no-brainer to have one person, finally, some spectator, and you're not supposed to do this at the Navy war game, a spectator who remained unnamed, passed a little note to one of the people at this table, one of the submarine experts. And the submarine expert looked at the note, gave a angry glance at the person who wasn't supposed to give it, sat there for a couple seconds, and about a minute later, I watched the notes start going down the line under the table from person to person. Submarine people gave it to the technical people gave it to the battleship people gave it to the professor people, and finally the note gets to the person, the officer running that session, and he goes, "What about the ice?" he says. "Is there any ice in October?" And they had a professor there, and the professor goes, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, can we move the ships then?" And the professor goes, "No." And the Marine officer asked if they could blow up the ice. And the answer was no. So the Navy did say at the end of that. But again, just to underline, nobody's doing you a favor by bringing North Slope people into these meetings. We're really protecting the common interests of the whole country, of everyone. It's not a favor. It's kind of a no-brainer, smart thing to do. Last question for our 10 minutes, okay. Environmental groups.
Okay.
When I remember a couple times ago I came into Anchorage. Again, I'm an environmentalist, but we need to get into this. There was a big World Wildlife Fund poster on the wall that showed Eskimo children and polar bears.
Yeah.
And the inference was that they spoke for the Native people of the North Slope. And I know Richard Glenn has said that they want to put some environmentalists want to put you in a snow globe and shake it up like it's 4,000 years ago. What would you like to say to environmental groups about who you are?
Well, I think like any other group, sometimes You have some that are on the far left, and some that are on the far right, and some that are right down the path that we want to go to, that we are concerned about. The ones that I, as mayor, opposed, along with a good faction of my fellow Inupiaqs and organizations, was the extreme environmentalist that said, shut everything down. We're going to sue you, U.S. government, till you can't move anymore. We're going to shut down oil up in the Arctic. And we say, who are you speaking for? Certainly not speaking for us Inupiaqs, although there may be token face or two. But we as Inupiaq want to control our own destiny. We want to be the ones who decide how far do we go with this. We as a people want to dictate what economic opportunities are there for us. In essence, some of these extreme environmental groups were saying we're shutting off any possibility of our economic lifeline. Anwar is already out the door. I mean, that's out of bounds. NPRA reduced from possible $10 billion in the last 6 months down to maybe 1 billion barrels of oil. What else is left? You've heard the Trans-Alaska pipeline being down now pretty close to 500,000 barrels a day from a top of a little over 2 million barrels a day. Once that goes down, then our tax base goes down. And that's down the road yet. We debate within ourselves, when is that day coming? But if we were to shut everything off on oil and gas, you can effectively say that what we have adjusted to in one generation, one and a half generation of a lifestyle we have now, where we have the cash economy and we're still living our subsistence way of life, that all of a sudden the cash will be gone. What's going to run our schools, our airports, our roads, our landfills, our water sewer? What's going to replace that? As mayor, my dilemma had been to strike that balance where our concerns are addressed. And they're reasonable mitigation measures I was asking for on behalf of our people. While they have the right attitude, in fact, I work with a lot of environmental groups because we had things in common. As mayor of the North Slope Borough, my charge, I felt, as our prior leaders that established the North Slope Borough said, was to protect our way of life and to reap the benefits of Prudhoe Bay economically for our people, as we are trying to do now. Before I forget, there is not a single dime going to the state or to the North Slope Borough for these 2-point-something billion bucks worth of leases out there. They're all going to the federal government. There's a little bit, the coastal aid that comes to us. But in essence, when you look at it that way, we are asked as Inupiaq people to take all the risk of a possible oil spill for no return other than a few contracting jobs, a little bit of work. And that's why I say we need what's happening here and we need involvement. We need to be working today. And I'm talking to my own people and all the entities. It's not tomorrow or next week, next month, or a year from now. It's today we need to be preparing and working now to address what I believe is going to happen. George W. Bush supported offshore. President Obama supports offshore. So it's all hinging on Shell's confirmation of this exploratory season. If they find those billions and billions barrels of oil and gas, the whole thing changes. The whole thing changes. And I try to imagine that. And Olona Corporation, they're here. Then you're going to be a part of the tour. They're right there, 60-some miles from where all the activity is going to happen. So back to your question, environmental groups. No offense, we don't like to offend anybody, but we do have our own way of doing things, and we want to set our own destiny. We're reasonable people. We are a practical people. And that is why, as I was taught, to always continue talking, and I like to borrow a term, said, till I'm blue in the face of what it is that we're concerned about, and hopefully that a little light bulb will come on the industry side. Certainly, I think on the Department of Interior side, they have responded. Sometimes I say, hey, not too far now. Don't go too far. Because we know the realities of our life. I talk, when I talk like this, of my wife and I's grandkids that I'm so looking forward to seeing tonight that live in Anchorage over there. And my son and my daughter. And that's why I get so passionate about this. Because we have reaped the fruits of Prudhoe Bay, my generation. How fortunate we were, in spite of all the changes, to have the lifestyle that we have now. And I'm no different, we're no different than any other ethnic group or anybody in America. We want a better life for our kids and our grandkids. So I don't know where that went from environmentalist, but that's about it. So.
I think that's about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Edward,
okay. Thanks, Bob. Okay.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Bob Reese, author of The Eskimo and the Oil Man, and the Honorable Edward Itta, former mayor of the North Slope Borough. Their onstage conversation was recorded at the Arctic Imperative Summit on August 27, 2012. Alaska Dispatch hosted the Arctic Imperative Summit at Alyeska Resort in Girdwood. They also provided audio for this four-part series on KSKA, as well as a complete online video archive of the conference. You can find a link at alaskapublic.org. Next week on Addressing Alaskans, our month-long series from the Arctic Imperative Summit concludes with a panel discussion on sustainable development in the Arctic. Featured speakers include Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, commander of the 17th District U.S. Coast Guard, the Honorable Charlotte Brower, mayor of the North Slope Borough, and Ed Crooks, U.S. Industry and Energy Editor for the Financial Times. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans at alaskapublic.org. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Addressing Alaskans' theme song, Trampolines, is by Patrick Lee. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.